the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Did you see the Republican clown show last night? It was a hoot. I'm guessing probably most of you didn't. It was just on C-SPAN. It wasn't a, quote, debate, because debates are not allowed by the RNC unless they're sanctioned by the RNC, and this was not. So it was a number of people in the media have said that it was analogous to speed dating, where each person basically sits down and gives a five-minute riff about how wonderful they are and why you should vote for them or date them in the case of speed dating. And, you know, once again, Louise and I were watching it, and we actually watched it a little delay. You can see it. It's, you know, there's a clip. The whole thing is over on C-SPAN's website. And the thing that I kept getting throughout the whole thing is, where is the Democratic response? Why is nobody talking back to these people? I get it that Debbie Wasserman Schultz wants to have as few debates as possible to protect Hillary Clinton. I get that. And, you know, I understand the logic. You know, back in 2008, there was, what, over 20 Democratic debates? And Hillary ended up losing to Barack Obama. Wasn't a good thing. And so, you know, and I, you know, if Hillary's our nominee, I will do everything I can to get her elected. I think she'd make a fine president. I think Bernie Sanders would make a better president, but I think, you know, Hillary would do just fine. But that said, I think that, you know, the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz in their attempts to protect the establishment candidate are actually hurting the institutional Democratic Party in general, and the progressives in the Democratic Party in particular, and the American people. Because all these lies got laid out last night, or all these positions which are, you know, for which there is an opposing point of view, and none of the opposing point of views were presented. There should have been a Democratic forum that, you know, went back to back with the Republican. I mean, every time the Republicans have one of these things, all you see on TV all the time is Republicans, especially Donald Trump, Republicans talking about, you know, how terrible Obama is, and Obamacare is a failure, and Iran's going to eat our lunch, and blah, 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 blah. So anyhow, since the DNC will not talk back to the Republicans, the Clinton campaign won't talk back to the Republicans, Bernie refuses to run negative ads. I understand that. He's never run one in his whole entire life. So he's not going to talk back to the Republicans. He's talking about his own, you know, specific plans. So I guess that leaves me. So let's hear what some of these, you know, let's just visit the clown car and, you know, honk some bozo noses and see what comes up. Here is Jeb Bush last night telling us that, you know, that we really shouldn't worry so much about civil liberty. That's kind of a stupid thing to worry about. We really should just, like, be afraid like we were on 9/11. Here he is.
Well, I think we've let our guard down a little bit. It's typical. It happens when you have an attack on our country, like happened in 9/11. We united. We responded. We created, I think, a security apparatus that kept us safe. And over time now, concerns about civil liberties and other things have come into the forefront. And I think we need to reinvigorate this.
Right. Do away with those stupid civil liberties. And let's go back to that, you know, how we united and then got lied to by a guy named Bush. Oh, was that your brother? Oh, yeah, that's right. Anyway, so there's Jeb Bush telling us our civil liberties, you know, are getting in the way of our security. Right. Again, it's not just Democrats who would be pushing back on that. I think most Americans would be pushing back on that. Here's Dr. Ben Carson. This was the first time I've ever actually seen Ben Carson. It's weird because there's a couple of conservatives who I debate regularly on TV. And one of them in particular is constantly coming and saying, did you hear what Ben Carson said last week? And I'm like, I literally have never seen Ben Carson in the media. It turns out the reason why is because I don't watch Fox so-called news. And apparently that's the only place he exists, which should tell you something about, you know, the Republican base and how this guy's doing in the polling, because he's doing quite well. Anyhow, he's a retired neurosurgeon neurosurgeon, I guess. And he says, you know, we can do away with Obamacare. and replace it with a $5,000 savings account, a health savings account, which is tax-free. It's not money you get from the government. It's, you know, the first $5,000 that you earn, you get to set aside, you know, without paying income taxes on it. And then you can buy a catastrophic coverage policy. So, you know, if your hospital bills go over $1 million, it's covered. You would expect this from a guy who's a millionaire, right? And, you know, if you happen to have a disease that costs $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000, $200,000, just suck it up, buddy. Here's Ben Carson.
Washington would say you can't give health savings accounts to the indigent because they're too stupid and they wouldn't be able to manage them. They think everybody's like them. But the fact that it's not true. And in fact, you know, they said that about food stamps, and people learn how to manage food stamps. And they would learn this too. Mr. Jones, who has that diabetic foot ulcer, quickly learns not to go to the emergency room, spend five times more. He would go to the clinic, same treatment, but instead of just sending him out, they say, now let's get your diabetes under control so you're not back here in 3 weeks with another problem. He's learning personal responsibility, and we're doing things that teach that rather than dependency.
Right. He's learning personal responsibility by spending his $5,000 and then, you know, having to presumably put the rest of it on his credit card. Chris Christie. Will I be president or not? I guess I have to look in the mirror. Does this have to do with his losing weight? I don't, you know, because he had that gastric bypass surgery, and I guess he's lost like over 100 pounds. Is that what he's talking about? He's like, I got to look in the mirror? Here he is.
Listen, no one should run for president of the United States so they can look in the mirror and say they're ready. And when folks approached me 4 years ago, I was really honored, but I looked in the mirror and I said, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to be president of the United States. I've been governor for about 16 months in New Jersey. I was not ready. And so I looked this time, 4 years later, in the mirror, and everything that's happened to me in the last 4 years, both good and bad, have made me better, have made me better prepared.
Right. And when those indictments come down... Oh, man, Chris Christie. I mean, you know, people forget that the Ronald Reagan administration had more senior officials, it was well over 100, be indicted or convicted of high crimes and misdemeanors and go to prison in many cases than any administration in the history of America. The Reagan administration was the most corrupt administration in the history of this country. Chris Christie would beat that, no doubt. I mean, he's off to such a great start in New Jersey. Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, the United States is now the lead sponsor of terrorism. Barack Obama, right? He's the head sponsor of terrorism in the world because he wants to make a deal with Iran that will do away with the nuclear weapons. Somehow all these guys forget that Iran has a legal nuclear power program that we installed for them when the Shah was there. Anyhow, here's Ted Cruz.
Speaking the truth is not rhetoric. The truth is, if this administration, if President Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry are responsible for sending billions of dollars to Iran, and that Iran goes, that those billions go to jihadists who use that money to murder Americans, to murder Israelis, to murder Europeans, then the administration is responsible.
Right. You're responsible for whatever your allies do. So since we're allies with Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is the major exporter of Wahhabism, which inspires Al-Qaeda and ISIS, I guess that whoever cut that deal with the Saudis, who was that, FDR? I don't, it was way back in the day. I don't know. Must be responsible for all those things. The logic that these guys use, well, it's not logic. It's demagoguery. It's you know, if Obama did it, it's wrong. According to Ted Cruz, he wants Iran to, you know, remain isolated and keep enriching uranium. Real bright there, Ted. Real bright. I know you can fry bacon on a machine gun, but really, anything else? We'll be back. I got 10 more of these clips. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And of course, it's Anything Goes Summer. So throughout this hour, between the clips, I'll be taking your calls as well. We'll be back. And welcome back. Ooh, new one sheet. How cool is that? Welcome back. Let's see here. Ray watching Free Speech TV in Newburgh, Indiana. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Ray.
Wrote a letter to Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
Said, What we need in a Democratic Party, obviously besides Bernie, is a full-time chairperson so they can act as a spokesman like the Republicans.
Right.
And also that we need a 50-state strategy because there's places like Indiana, if they get their stuff together, that next year they might pick up a congressional seat or two.
Yeah.
Did not get a response. Not even a form letter.
Well, did you make a $10,000 contribution?
Of course not.
Okay, then you don't deserve a response. I mean, this is post Citizens United. The Supreme Court has said only rich people's voices matter. Princeton University did a study and found that basically what the top 10% of Americans want is more than 50% likely to be made into legislation. What the bottom 90% of Americans want is equally likely to be made it into legislation as is random noise, right? It's meaningless. So if you can't send a $10,000 check and demonstrate that you're part of the 1%, you shouldn't be surprised when any politician ignores you. I'm sorry, Ray, if I sound a little cynical here, but
during the Obama campaign, I could make over 1,000 phone calls on his behalf.
Yeah.
And they've got the money, but we've got the votes, and hopefully next year we can show them that the votes count
a heck of
a lot more than the money.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you know, you're making 1,000 calls. That's an astonishing number of calls. You're making 1,000 calls is certainly worth $10,000. Did you do that?
Yes.
Oh, did you tell Debbie Wasserman Schultz that you did that?
Of course not.
Well, I would say that, you know, so that she would take you seriously. I mean, that's like enclosing the $10,000 check. You know, I'm not just a guy with an opinion. I'm a guy with an opinion who actually, you know, puts his money or his effort in this case where his mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to try it again. You know, to send her another note. Although I'm guessing she'll still ignore you because, you know, she's committed to this path of very few debates. We're not going to make the mistakes we made in 2008 with over 20 debates. Very few debates, and, well, actually, sometime this week, they're supposed to announce the first debate. So, you know, hopefully we'll know by the end of the week. But how did you contact Debbie Wasserman Schultz? I'm just curious, Ray.
I wrote her a letter, sent it snail mail.
To her Washington, D.C. office or to her Florida office?
To her Washington, D.C. office.
Okay, quick tip. Any mail, any snail mail that goes to members of Congress in their D.C. offices takes about 3 to 5 weeks to get to them because there's a special mail sorting facility that is anthrax protected, and every letter has to go through this whole, you know, does it have anthrax in it process, which is very, very slow and burdensome. So if you want to get a letter to Debbie Wasserman Schultz or any other member of Congress, send it to their district office, their main district office. So, you'd look on her website, which is probably WassermanSchultz.house.gov. I'm guessing it almost certainly would have to be. And get the address of her Florida office. They will get the letter in 2 or 3 days. And we'll see if they respond or not. But keep us up to date, okay, Ray?
Okay.
Okay.
Good work.
Thanks a lot. And good on you for all those phone calls. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. Twenty minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where despair is not an option. Tip of the hat, by the way, to Luke Vargas of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. He's the guy who actually sat with the whole Republican forum last night and highlighted what he thought were the juiciest clips and then cut them out and put them up on the Talk Radio News website, which is where we got them from, so that I can share them with you. We work very closely with Talk Radio News, and good on Luke for doing this. So I thought one of the most bizarre moments of the night was when Carly Fiorina – let me back up a little bit. Dodd-Frank was passed, and Dodd-Frank regulates the banks. And what Dodd-Frank does is it provides this broad superstructure. It says, okay, the government now has the power to do this and this and this and this, right? Change reserve requirements, regulate banks in this way and that way. However, the individual agencies that are responsible for overseeing the banks and the executive branch have to actually write the rules and then put them into place. Now, it's been, 5 years, I think, since Dodd-Frank was passed, and No, it's been longer than that. It's in any case, it's been in that neighborhood. And because of Republican obstruction, by and large, most of these rules have not been written. I mean, the one consequential thing that came along with Dodd-Frank that actually did get done was the creation of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. And that was, you know, Elizabeth Warren's child, and she made that happen. But if Dodd-Frank was actually being used in action, had been all this time, and the rules had actually been written so that it could be applied, then the big banks would be broken up. But somehow Carly Fiorina got that upside down. Here she is.
Democrats passed Dodd-Frank. Dodd-Frank has caused, what, 10 Wall Street banks too big to fail have become 5 even bigger, more powerful Wall Street banks, and thousands of community banks have gone out of business. This is an example of crony capitalism. So we need to repeal Dodd-Frank, just like we need to repeal Obamacare.
Right. Well, happy to run Hewlett-Packard, which gets, you know, mind-boggling tax breaks wherever they can. I'm guessing Carly Fiorina is an expert on crony capitalism, but Dodd-Frank is not a piece of that. Lindsey Graham, this is, you know, it's so funny. Danielle and Shane and I were talking about this morning and about how, you know, really this the whole Republican thing last night was like, who's tougher than whom, right? Who's the real tough guy here? Mine is bigger than yours, you know, that kind of thing. And here's Lindsey Graham trying to do his little piece of this.
And what nations specifically are cheating us?
Well, China is cheating. They manipulate their currency to create a discount for products made in China, and we don't do a damn thing about it. They're building islands over resource-rich territory owned by others because they can. They cyber attack us, steal our intellectual property, and nobody pushes back. If I'm president, we're going to push back against China.
So Lindsey Graham, he must have introduced legislation. He must have authored and introduced legislation pushing back on China, right? Working against currency manipulators? Oh, that legislation was filibustered by Republicans. That was Democratic legislation. You know, it's the hypocrisy is mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. Lindsey Graham, to the best of my knowledge, and please, you know, if I'm wrong, and I know that there are Republican fact-checkers out there listening, call in and correct me. I'd love to know if I'm wrong. But to the best of my knowledge, Lindsey Graham complaining about China, Lindsey Graham has never been the principal author of any legislation that would stop anybody from cheating or that would take us out of any of these so-called free trade deals that are so beloved by the big corporations that own virtually every single one of these Republicans. Bobby Jindal said, you know, he in a shout out to the Hard Reich and the and to the Israel and Saudi lobbies, basically packed he gets the award, Bobby Jindal, for the largest number of misstatements, half truths, and absolute BS jammed into one long sentence for the entire evening. I mean, you know, Bobby Jindal wins the prize. Here he is.
This is a bad deal. He has declared war on trans fats and a ceasefire with the largest state-sanctioned sponsor of terrorism. Look, a good deal would say anytime, anywhere inspections, would say no centrifuges, no enriched uranium, would say they have to cut off ties to Hamas, Hezbollah, and terrorist groups. They have to recognize Israel's right to exist. They have to free those American prisoners. We will only, no plutonium pathway, we will only gradually lift sanctions, not immediately. Syria loves it. Israel hates the deal. That tells you all you need to know when our friends hate it and our enemies love it.
Thank you, Governor.
Right. We also want a pony, right? I mean, we got to have a pony. Okay, Bobby Jindal. John Kasich. Now, John Kasich is the guy who went to a Koch brothers meeting, and when one of the billionaire wives there, the wife of the guy who owns the football team, I guess, or baseball team down in Arizona, asked him why he allowed Obamacare Medicaid coverage to be expanded in the state of Ohio. He said, "I don't know about you, lady, but when I die, they're not, you know, the St. Peter's not going to ask me whether I cut the size of government. He's going to ask me what I did for the poor." At which point, the billionaire lady got up and walked out of the room along with about 15 other people. And John Kasich has not yet been invited back to any of the Koch brothers events, and probably never will be again. So here's what he had to say, and I thought this was actually a thoughtful comment. John Kasich.
Well, I'm not here to criticize my party, but what I will tell you is I think that economic growth is not just an end unto itself. I think it's very important that with economic growth comes responsibility and ability to help people who live in the shadows. But it's something that I think our party needs to talk more about so that people across this country understand that we get them. Sometimes, Jack, our problem is people don't necessarily think we get them.
Yeah, well, actually, no. It's that people realize that the Republicans, by and large, are just shills for the billionaires and the multinational corporations, and they don't give a rat's ass about the average working person, and particularly about women or minorities. John, that's really the problem. But, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio. So, you know, with probably the most rational point of the evening. Got a few more for you after we come back from the break, and we'll be picking up your calls here on this topic, or any other if you'd like, although I see most of the calls here are on this. By the way, did you see Robert Reich's piece in Huffington Post? It's the revolt against the ruling class. He says, you know, he's saying what I've been saying all along, the Trump and Bernie phenomena.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Is a classic example of how Americans are sick and tired of the insiders ever since Reagan came along and started destroying the political infrastructure of America. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about. One of them, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but got an email here from Candace over at the Free Press Action Fund. And the headline is, Comcast is suing net neutrality. Help us fight back. Yep. Like I said, you will not hear about this in the corporate media. Comcast owns NBC and MSNBC. So do not expect to hear that Comcast is actually suing to stop net neutrality. But apparently, 10 different lawsuits. Not all from Comcast, but big phone and cable companies have filed 10 lawsuits. Yes, really. To undermine the net neutrality rules you fought so hard for, writes the Free Press Action Fund. Just for our New Mexico listeners, KABQ and brain fart, the station in Santa Fe, it's probably our longest our affiliate we've had the longest, and I just blanked on their KTRC, that's right, KTRC. To our New Mexico listeners, there's going to be a commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the U.S. atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, August 6th and 9th, with peace vigils at Los Alamos, New Mexico, at the National Labs, and a national conference presented by Campaign Nonviolence, featuring leading activists and teachers from across the nation. For more information, you can go to PACEEBENE, and I'm not sure what that is or stands for, but PACEEBENE.org. So, check it out, as they say. Bernie Sanders just issued a news release on publicly funded elections and whatnot, quoting Jimmy Carter on my program. That's sweet. And I was wrong about Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham actually has sponsored legislation, along with Jeff Sessions and Chuck Schumer and Sherrod Brown, against Chinese currency manipulation. And, you know, when I was playing the clips, that was the thing that Lindsey Graham said. He said, you know, this is something that's a problem. And I said, oh, come on, Lindsey, you've never done anything about this. I was wrong. He actually has. So far, Lindsey Graham and John Kasich are winning the award of, some small amount of rationality. Everything else is kind of, you know, chest-beating whatever. Here's George Pataki. He says, let's cut 15%. Let's lay off 400,000 people. That would be all federal government jobs. If you were to take all government jobs, it would be over 3 million people, 15%. But 15% of the federal workforce is 400,000 people. George Pataki says, I want to be president, and the first thing I do is lay off 400,000 people. We're also going to stop spending money on Common Core. I don't think we're spending money on Common Core. Common Core is a voluntary thing. It's a set of, and he wants to cut Obamacare, of course. I mean, you know, everybody, they have to say that, right? So anyhow, here's George Pataki.
What federal government agencies do you think should be eliminated?
Well, let me start very briefly by saying we should get rid of Obamacare. We should get rid of Common Core.
and we should reduce the size of the federal workforce by at least 15%.
That's a plan. That's a plan. This guy really thinks it through carefully. Rand Paul talking about how, you know, I went to Chicago and now they like me better than Hillary. You know, it's and there's a little town in northern Louisiana where they like me better than Hillary. And there's a little town in western Texas where they like me better than Hillary. Rand Paul.
Well, I'm a different kind of Republican. I think we need a new GOP. I'm a Republican who actually is leading Hillary Clinton in five states won by President Obama. Why? Because I have been going places Republicans haven't been in years. I've been to Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia, Ferguson, with a message that liberty, low taxes will help poverty, will help joblessness.
Yeah, yeah. Low taxes on billionaires will help poverty. It'll help expand poverty, sure. Rick Perry lectures Jeb Bush. Yeah, this was the only time in the evening, as far as I could tell, that one candidate directly took a kick upside the head of another candidate. Here's Rick Perry, the guy that Donald Trump, who wasn't there because he was offended that the union, Manchester union leader, wrote nasty things about him, and they sponsored this event. But, you know, since Trump wasn't there to kick, he decided to go after Jeb. Here's Rick Perry.
And we have to cut spending. And I know a little bit about cutting spending. We had a $10 billion budget shortfall in my home state in 2003, Jeb. And we went in there and we made those cuts. And we told people that we would do that because we realize that's exactly how you have to live your life.
Right. Yeah, governments are just like households. In fact, that meme came up several times last night. And it's a nonsense meme. Households, I'm sorry, you know, no matter how much debt I have or don't have, I can't print my own money. Governments are, and the purpose of my household is not to provide for the public good. And, you know, I could go on and on, but, you know, households are not governments and vice versa. It's an indication of somebody who not only doesn't understand economics, but also doesn't understand the basic structure of government, doesn't understand, like, you know, Thomas Jefferson 101. Marco Rubio saying, you know, a lot of people who come into this country are like my sister-in-law, for example, who married my brother-in-law and after a multi-year romance and then became a U.S. citizen. And he doesn't think that that's a good thing, apparently. The same thing, by the way, Jeb Bush's wife, same situation. She was a Mexican citizen. Now she's a U.S. citizen. But Marco Rubio doesn't like that. Instead, he just wants us to bring in people who have, quote, merit. What is that? Millionaires? People who scored, you know, high on the SATs? I don't know. Anyhow, here's Marco Rubio.
We are the most generous country in the world on immigration. We admit 1 million people a year legally to the United States, but we do so primarily on the basis of whether or not they have a relative living here. We cannot afford to do it that way anymore. In the 21st century, legal immigration must be based on merit, on what you can contribute economically, basically whether you are coming to be an American as opposed to simply live in America.
Yeah, so forget about, you know, any idea of falling in love with somebody who's not a U.S. citizen, because you will never get them to be able to come to this country if Marco Rubio becomes president. Little Ricky Santorum, he said, well, at least I'm not running against Romney this time. This was one of the more inane comments of the evening. Here he is.
You've run before. You glad you made the decision to do it again?
It's been a tremendous opportunity the last time around. This time around, it's actually better because last time everybody was trying to say we were more conservative than Mitt Romney. This time you're actually talking about issues and how we're going to help this country, and that's a good thing.
Thank you, Senator.
Right. We're actually talking about issues. Where are the Democrats talking back, Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Why did we not hear from Bernie and Martin O'Malley and Hillary Clinton and Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee? Why did we not hear from them last night, right after the Republicans were done? You don't have to make it a debate. You can do it like the Iowa thing, you know, where they just speak one after the other. Anyway, here's the last one. This is Scott Walker. He, of course, owes his political career to the Koch brothers. And the Koch brothers are, you know, inherited an oil fortune from daddy. Their daddy made a pile of money with Joe Stalin, you know, drilling oil in Russia. And now they run, you know, the oil business, refining business, tar sands in Canada, pipelines, refineries. Well, I guess I said refineries, gas, coal. They're in all these, and plus, you know, some pretty dirty industries like making paper and things with their Georgia Pacifica company. So here's Scott Walker basically lying about Obama's plan to reduce the amount of carbon emission, carbon pollution that these plants are putting out and replace that with free sunlight. Here's Scott Walker.
Well, first off, it's not the clean power plan. It's the costly power plan. It would be like a buzzsaw to the nation's economy. The states like mine and many of the other governors here would be devastated by that. And I'm an Eagle Scout. We were taught a long time ago your campsite should be cleaner when you leave than when you find it. So I want to balance a sustainable environment with a sustainable economy.
You know, George McGovern ran. He didn't talk about it very much, but, you know, he flew 35 bombing missions in World War II. John McCain was a prisoner of war for 5 years, flew a bunch of bombing missions. It's like we have a long history, Ulysses S. Grant, you know. We have a long history, Dwight Eisenhower, of people with a great military background saying, you know, yeah, I was the supreme Allied commander of American forces in Europe and took down Hitler. And Scott Walker, I was an Eagle Scout. It's really? That qualifies you for president of the United States. I mean, this is not to put down Eagle Scouts. You know, one of my best friends was an Eagle Scout, Bill Thomas. But it's like, really? Really? Oh, my. Okay, and last note, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls here. Sandra Bland's family has filed a federal lawsuit, and good on them, as the new details are emerging. This over Sean King writing over at Daily Kos. In a nation where less than 1% of police officers who use lethal force, who kill people, or nearly kill people, are ever successfully prosecuted for misconduct, our nation's civil lawsuit system is basically the only choice you have. If your relatives are killed by a cop, the odds of that cop ever being held to account are 99% against you. It's literally only 1%. But you can sue. And the arresting officer violated policies. The jail was violating policies. The video was edited, apparently. The family, the state said, oh, we are doing another autopsy. They released marijuana levels that were just patently false, or apparently false, and just designed to smear the victim. Right? I mean, this is what they do. So her family's going to sue. Good on them. Good luck.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I thought it was fascinating that the issue of Black Lives Matter and the issue of Latino lives and whatnot was not, to the best of my knowledge, not even brought up last night. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see. Jim in Chelmsford, Massachusetts, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing? I love your show. I watch it all the time.
Thanks.
I just want to make a couple quick comments about a couple of the Republican candidates who are running.
Sure.
Donald Trump's in the lead with 25%. That's the 25% of the Republican Party who are, you know, watch Fox News. That's all that is. He'll blow away. He's going to, forget him. Ted Cruz, I saw a clip. He's cooking bacon on a machine gun by eating the barrel of a machine gun.
Yeah.
I was under the impression that even in Texas, it's illegal for American citizens to own automatic weaponry. Okay.
I think you're right. Although that doesn't, although there are exceptions for that, because I've fired automatic weapons on ranges, on licensed certified ranges.
Okay.
Now, I was in Georgia.
Okay.
So.
Well, that makes sense. But still, what kind of Yahoo? You know, what kind of ad is that? I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
This guy wants to be president, and that's how he's promoting.
He's probably a charter member of the Small Penis Gun Club.
He probably is. I once kept an NRA guy on the phone for 45 minutes and then said, no, I don't want to join. He said, well, why did you talk to me for so long? I said, to keep you from talking to anyone else.
Good on you, Jim.
I have a lot of free time. I'm disabled. And I want you to do a show on how the Republicans are going after the Social Safety Net, and they're going to destroy it and send tens of thousands, I don't know how many, disabled people out on the street.
Right. They've already set up a 20% cut in Social Security disability that will go into effect just before the election next year.
So my Social Security disability is going to take a 20% hit?
If the Republicans have their way. They changed, normally At the end of every couple of years, there are two Social Security funds. There's the disability fund and the retirement fund. And money from taxes goes into both funds, but it's split according to a formula. So it's like, you know, 20% of the money from taxes goes into the disability fund and 80% goes into the retirement fund or whatever it is. Those are not the real numbers, but just for example. And what happens is every couple of years, one of those funds ends up short. And so they simply transfer money out of the other one because, you know, the more people are disabled or fewer people are retiring or more people are retiring or whatever. And it's just a routine thing. I mean, it's done. Congress has done it, you know, 30, 40 times since Social Security was created in the 1930s. And the first thing the Republicans did in the new Congress in January of this year, when they were sworn into office, when they established the rules for the House of Representatives, is they created a rule saying that they could not balance those funds in this election cycle without a supermajority. And so if that, I'm pretty sure it was the supermajority, but there's a giant glitch there, a giant catch that they can't rebalance those funds. And so it's going to take a major legislative effort. It's going to be some kind of a big showdown. They're trying to create a showdown with the president, and they're going to run around going, "Oh, Social Security is going broke. Look at this, you know, 20%." And they've created it themselves. They set this up, and it's.
Does Obama have the ability to veto this?
No, this is the rules of the House of Representatives, and the Constitution says that each chamber, the House and the Senate, get to create their own rules under which they conduct themselves. So they created a rule saying that we cannot legislate this particular thing. And you can Google it. There's a lot of op-eds and whatnot written about it, but they're going to treat it as if it just kind of magically happened next year as this comes right. You know, this is the Social Security Disability Fund is projected to start running out in October of next year, just in time for the election. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception, Tom Hartman here with you. Thomas in Flint, Michigan, listening on FYI Nation. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Hey, I wanted to give one of these Republican clown car riders a positive feedback.
Okay.
Chris Christie admitted that the war on drugs was a failure last night.
Yeah.
And he also said that we need to do more rehabilitation than prison. And that's... I mean, I can't stand the guy, but at least somebody admitted it on the platform, though he probably won't on Fox News.
Yeah, no, I think he probably would in Fox News, and Rand Paul would agree with that. It's increasingly becoming a bipartisan perspective. I mean, Democrats have been opposed to the war on drugs in large part for quite some time now because it's destroying lives. Republicans are opposed to it because every year that you put somebody in prison costs us $50,000. And, you know, they don't want that $50,000. They up until recently, they were fine with that $50,000 going to a prison. But God forbid we should give somebody free college education that might cost half that. But now they're talking about saving money. So, yeah, a good point, Thomas. Chris Christie deserves some credit for that to the extent that he deserves credit for anything. Thanks for the call. Elliot in Mission Viejo, California. Hey, Elliot, what's up?
Yes. Hi, Tom. Great coverage of C-SPAN. And getting back to what all these Republicans share in common, namely privatizing health care, here's a way we can show working people, particularly your audience, can show working people that we care about them and the economy in general. Next time you're paying the cashier for the goods you're buying at a large retail chain, ask the cashier if this company offers health care coverage. I've done it and got some great positive feedback.
Yeah, there's that, and here's another one for you. Because this is kind of guerrilla warfare, you know, political guerrilla warfare, and it's brilliant, Elliot, what you're suggesting. The one that I do is in restaurants. I'll say, "Do you have a paid sick day policy?" And when they say no, then I say, "Well, I think I'm going to have to go to a different restaurant because I don't want somebody who's sneezing all over my food back in the kitchen to be preparing my food. You know, I don't want somebody coming into work if they're sick because they don't have paid sick days." And that has raised a few eyebrows a few times. And you know, of course, the people working there, you know, no, we don't have paid sick days, but boy, we sure like them. Well, please pass this along to the management. And I sure will. You know, so, yeah, that guerrilla politics. Good on you, Elliot. Thanks for the call. Libby in Seattle. Hey, Libby, you wanted to plug the WAMEND and Bernie event in Seattle this weekend?
You bet. Hi, Tom. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are. Bernie's coming to town. He's going to be at two rallies, 1 to 3 downtown at the Westlake Mall in celebration of the 50th anniversary of Social Security, of course. And then
on what day?
In the evening from 6
on what day, Libby? So,
pardon me?
What day is this, Libby?
Saturday.
Saturday, okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Coming Saturday, the 8th.
Okay.
So, then
Westlake Mall in the afternoon, then in the evening?
At the Heckhead Pavilion over by the University of Washington.
Oh, great.
And Waman people will be out collecting signatures because we're working on the very same issue that is the central part of Bernie's platform, as you know, is to get big money out of elections.
Yep.
And we'd love a big shout out from Bernie from the stage to in support of our hardworking Waman volunteers all over the state.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Libby, thank you for the call and good luck. Waman.org, W-A, as in Washington Move to Amend, or Washington Amend the Constitution, W-A-M-E-N-D.org is the website. Thank you, Libby. Horacio in San Diego, California. Hey, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
None of them talked about how we were going to leave Iraq or Afghanistan or quit spending $9 million a day. I thought they were conservatives.
Yeah, right. These guys aren't conservatives. They're I don't know. They're captives of Fox News. They're shills for billionaires and corporations. They're not conservatives. I know conservative, and there was not one on that platform last night. Not one genuine. Well, maybe John Kasich. Arguably, John Kasich was you know, my dad's kind of Republican, but even he buys into too much of, you know, drinks way too much of the Kool-Aid. But excellent point, Horacio. Thank you for the call. Al in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Al, what's up?
Tom, you are awesome.
Thank you.
I've always, I think I told you this before, but you're an intellectual genius, my friend.
Thank you.
I really mean that.
That's fine. That's fine, Al. But that's not what you called about, right?
No.
Okay.
I just had to get that out.
Thanks.
Yeah, I've just been trying to find a way. I get all the spam from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and I reply by telling her that I do not support the Democrats right now. I support Bernie Sanders. And until we can get Bernie Sanders to get his debate, I think it's high time that we start calling the, you know, there's a website called all in small lowercase letters, my.democrats.org. And the main number is 202-863-8000. When I called there, it's almost like they didn't want to hear what I had to say. And it sounded like they were laughing at me in the background, you know, like they were throwing, tossing paper.
Is this the DNC?
Like a bunch of clowns. Yeah, the DNC. I even tried to call Harry Reid. Harry Reid's main number, and I didn't get an answer, but I left a message on the answer machine basically saying I do not support the Democrats.
But Bernie's running as a Democrat, Al, so if you're supporting Bernie, you're supporting the Democrats.
We've got to let them know that we are going to challenge the Democratic establishment because this is a one-time opportunity to get Bernie Sanders in there.
I agree.
I'll tell you right now, if they're going to pull this kind of you know, but now I know what our party is all about. They're about the corporate Democrat. We have got to stop it because basically,
well, about a third of the party is. You had an idea about business cards?
Actually, that was my next step. Was to, you know, I've been handing out business cards, and I've been talking to people at the grocery store. A lot of them don't even know who Bernie Sanders is. And this is.
So you had some cards printed up that talk about Bernie?
Yeah, I when there, I guess you can get 500 cards made up for $9.99 or
yeah,
you know what I mean?
There's no shortage of sites that'll do that.
Right, and I think we should start mailing postcards across the country and just let people know, hey, this is a one-time opportunity.
Yeah, that business card thing is a really cool idea. It would be that's fascinating. If I had, we do have a website at TomHartmann.com. You know, people send in business cards or graphics or things that could be used for business cards. That could be really interesting. Al, thanks for the idea, and thanks for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to Tom Hartmann. This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Cecil the Lion got a lot of publicity. We talked about him at some length one day last week. I guess it was the day after the dentist went into hiding. And Jorge Amsel, a certified firearms instructor, writer, and author with Gun Digest's Shooter's Guide to Concealed Carry. His website is Guns and Tacos, G-U-N-S, the letter N, tacos.com, is on the line with us. Jorge, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. So why, in your mind, is it just fine to go over to Africa and kill lions?
Well, it's no different. To me, it's no different than eating a hamburger. You know, if anybody who eats meat has no room to criticize. I mean, you're more than happy to pay someone else to do the dirty work so you can enjoy your hamburger, but God forbid someone actually go out there and do the shooting himself.
I don't recall the dentist eating that lion. In fact, to the best of my knowledge, they skinned him and they left the flesh behind on the ground. It's you know, that's this is an apples and oranges comparison. Trophy hunting is a completely different thing from food hunting. I don't have a problem. I grew up in Michigan. I lived in rural Vermont, rural New Hampshire for decades. And, you know, I've known a lot of hunters who are literally subsistence hunters, people who are living below the poverty line. And if they get a deer in the fall and during deer season, that's their food throughout, you know, until the middle of the next summer. I don't have a problem with that. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about going over to another continent, killing an endangered species just to have a trophy. Do you think McDonald's is going to start passing out stuffed deer heads?
Well, I mean, you raise a lot of interesting points.
Or excuse me, cowheads?
Cowheads, yeah. I do try to talk about sort of the hunting ethics that are involved in this. And a lot of different hunters have different ethics. For example, I know a lot of hunters who won't shoot anything unless they intend to eat it. So, for example, they won't shoot prairie dogs because, A, you can't eat them because they all have the plague. You know. So, but a lot of people go out and shoot prairie dogs. It just depends. So, I mean, in your mind, everything would have been okay if you had eaten the lion? That's what makes the difference?
No, because the lion was not basically grown for food. I mean, we by eliminating the top predators here in North America, by killing off the wolves, we have created a situation where there's deer overpopulation. And so what we're doing is we're cultivating deer for food, at least in the states where hunting's a big deal. With cows and pigs and chickens and things, we grow them for food. And speaking as a guy who's been a vegetarian since I was 16 years old, I actually have some empathy for the argument that, you know, if you're eating meat at the supermarket, you know, you can tone down your complaining about people killing things. On the other hand, that lion was not grown for food. In fact, to the contrary, we've gone from a population of about a half a million lions back just 15, 20 years ago to, what, 40,000 or something like that in the world right now. I mean, I forget the numbers, but it's very, very low. That lion was killed for his head. And had he stayed in that game preserve that he was lured out of, he would have generated a lot of money for the country, for helping the species. Instead, that 50 grand that dentist paid went to the two guys who guided him, and you know, they, I guarantee you, they stashed it in a bank account someplace. It did not go to help either the animals or the poor people in those areas. And I see this, and I see it like Dick Cheney when he shot Harry, what's his name, in the face. You know, it was because they were they had captive, I don't know if it was pheasants or doves or whatever it was, in these cages, and the guy would open the cage and the doves would fly out, and Cheney would swing his gun around and shoot it. That doesn't seem to me like sport. Killing things for fun or killing things to have trophies to say, yeah, I killed that. That sounds to me like somebody who's like some guy who's got too small a penis.
Well, again,
I mean, what do you need to prove?
Well, I mean, I'm going to disagree with you here, obviously. You know, that do you think it makes any difference to the lion why he's being hunted? If it's to mount his head on the wall or to eat him for a subsistence.
You can't eat a lion. He's a top predator. We don't eat predators.
Well, we eat bear. That's a predator.
Bears are sort of predators. Bears are omnivores. The vast majority of their diet is actually vegetables and fruits.
All right, but people do hunt bear in this country.
Yes, they do. And there's, you know, I think that that's kind of, depending on where you are in this country, I think that's kind of dicey. But, you know, when I lived in Vermont, they very, very carefully calibrate the bear hunting to make sure that they don't reduce the the herd, as it were. There's a different word for bears than for deer, to a point where it becomes an endangered species.
Well, they do the same thing for lions. They control how many licenses are issued for lion hunting. They control how many licenses they issue for elephant hunting, for giraffe hunting.
Yeah, and it should be zero for all of these species, in my opinion.
Well, here's the problem. When you make it...
These are not animal foods. These are not food animals, excuse me.
An elephant most certainly is a food animal. Hippopotamus certainly a food animal.
Maybe when they were as common as the bison were in North America, but they're not that common anymore. And the countries in Africa that have these kind of animals can make a hell of a lot more money on tourism than they can on bringing in small penis gun club guys.
Well, small penis or not, big wallet. And they actually make a lot more money selling hunting licenses than having tourists take photos of the animals.
Actually, no. That's well debunked. The tourism produces a lot more money for all of the African countries that have game preserves. I've spent a fair amount of time in Africa. I've never gone on a big game hunt or anything like that. But these countries are making money off tourism.
But you can do both. They have no incentive.
Not if you're killing off the things that people are paying to come look at.
Like you said, for bear, you're hunting them in a controlled fashion, a specific number that keeps the population healthy.
But people don't go to Vermont to look at bears. You know, we don't have, you know, when I lived in Vermont, they didn't have safaris to go out in the woods looking for bears. You're mixing up apples and oranges here. They're completely different things.
Okay, well, there's still plenty of lions for people to go look at. There's not.
The lion population is crashing, and when a population drops below a certain point, your genetic diversity starts to vanish, and you're really, really messing with the species. You're putting them on the road to extinction.
Well, then you reduce the number of licenses that you issue.
How about taking it to zero?
Well, in some cases,
what is noble about killing a lion? I don't get it.
Well, that's a completely separate argument. I mean,
that's my entire argument, is that this is something that people do out of some sort of neurotic need to show that they're tougher and bigger than the lion. And I think that it's bizarre. I think it's a psychopathology.
It's no different than hunting any other animal.
That's not true. If you're hunting a deer for food, I mean, you know, I get it. Some people will take the buck and they'll put the antler rack up on the wall, but they're hunting an animal that has been, you know, we've reduced the predator. I think, frankly, we should increase the wolves and stop hunting the deer too. But you know, I get it that there are people. You know, I've known people. Like I said, when I lived in Vermont, the guy who lived down the road from us made a living sharpening chainsaws. He could not afford to buy meat in the store. And you know, every fall he'd get a deer.
Yeah, but the vast majority of hunters, it's cheaper for them to buy meat in the store than to go hunting. You know, it's...
Depends on where you live and what you're doing, but not if we're talking big game hunting. I'm talking about big game hunting here, and I'm saying there's no justification for it that I can figure out. Can you explain to me what the justification is?
There is no ethical difference between any kind of hunting.
That's not true.
Because
hunting for food is a completely different thing.
But you don't need nobody. Hardly anybody in this country needs to hunt for food. Okay.
I disagree. I disagree. You have never been in the poor parts of a rural state like Michigan, Vermont, or New Hampshire.
Do you think the majority of hunters in this country need to do it for the food?
No, I'd say it's probably about 20%.
I'd be surprised if it's that much. So 80% of the hunters aren't doing it for the food. They do it because they enjoy hunting.
Yeah.
Well, then how's that any different than hunting a lion?
Because deer are not an endangered species.
So you control how many licenses you issued because the population is a small population. They issue very limited licenses for elk. They issue very limited licenses for mountain lion. Sometimes, you know, people pay tens of thousands of dollars for a tag for, you know, somebody's mountain.
Jorge, we're out of time. I think what we're coming down to here is just dueling values, basically, and which means that we're both right and we're both wrong. Hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Jorge Amsel, you can read his writings over at gunsandtacos.com, certified firearms instructor and writer for Gun Digest Shooter Guide. Thank you, Jorge.
Thank you very much.
So Shano says, if there's no ethical difference in hunting and, you know, regardless of what you hunt, why not hunt people? Yeah. Hunger Games. I think that's, you know, that would probably actually fly in the Republican debates, you know? Okay. Alan in Glendale, California. Hey, Alan, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up? Alan? You got to listen to your telephone, not your TV, because your TV is always on a delay. Robert in South, and if you could hear me and I couldn't hear you, just call us back and we'll put you back on. Robert in South Gray, South Carolina. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Yes, Scott Walker and the Boy Scouts. I was always under the impression that you won your merit badges by helping Granny across the street, not pushing her out in front of a bus.
Ha! That's a great one, Robert. That you win the one-liner award for the week, I think. That is great. Thank you for the call. Great to hear from you, Robert. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Well, first, the disabled guy, if he needs to know, it was Representative Sam Johnson of Texas who put in the legislation to cut disability, and then Rand Paul said that we're all fakers. But yesterday, I was watching Elizabeth. She gave a Warren. She gave a great speech.
We're going to play pieces of it as when we come back from this break.
Okay. Behind her came another senator, I can't remember her name, who said that there was a corporation that runs women's clinics that would gladly provide these services. So they had someone waiting in the wings to take the federal money for Planned Parenthood.
Right, a for-profit corporation that'll kick back donations to Republican legislators. Is that what you're talking about?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay. Of course.
And this was probably put up by the Christian Sharira Law Group, who want women to shut up and sit down.
Yeah.
But
I've been saying all along, this is about power. This is about male supremacy.
Yes, it is. It's part of the war on women to make us go home, sit down, and shut up.
Yep.
And but trying to watch that debate on C-SPAN, I couldn't do it either. And what I came up with is that the Republican Party has reached its sell-by date.
Yeah. I think they reached it back in the late 80s, early 90s, frankly. And that's, you know, George W. Bush never would have been president if it wasn't for the Supreme Court, because Al Gore actually got more votes in Florida if they'd all been counted. And Ronald Reagan wouldn't have been president if he hadn't cut a deal with the Ayatollah. Richard Nixon wouldn't have been president if he hadn't committed treason with South Vietnam. We have not had a legitimately elected Republican president since Eisenhower.
I know, and it scares me. The guy with the business cards, that's a great idea. I've been handing out pieces of paper. Now I'm going to go print up cards for Bernie and hand those out instead. I usually hit the baggage guys because they're young kids and say, you want free college? Go look up Bernie.
There you go. Yeah, I think it's
guerrilla war.
The one that Louise has used a number of times, I think it's called Vistaprint. And you can just, you know, you do it all online. You design the card, you push the button, and, you know, put in your credit card, and they charge you the $10 or whatever it is. And, you know, 4 or 5 days later, the cards show up in the mail. So I'm sure that there's, you know, 100 companies that do it. But, you know, and I have no relationship to Vistaprint other than that we've used them a lot. Norma, thank you for the call. It's always great to hear from you. And thank you for watching Free Speech TV. We will be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I got a note yesterday, I think it was, from Kimon Freeman, who was on our program earlier. It was last week. Yeah. Today's only Tuesday of this week. Saying, why is it that the hashtag Lion Lives Matter is going nuts and Black Lives Matter not so much? Why, you know, why all this hysteria around the lion? And not Sandra Bland, for example. Or not, I mean, you know, and she's just, you know, one of many, 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 many. I think we can be outraged about both, frankly. But I do absolutely understand what he's saying. And he's right. He's right. We've got cops hunting people. You know, Shano made the comment to me when we went out of the last segment after talking with Jorge. You know, if all hunting is morally equal, then why not hunt people? Well, apparently there are some cops who do that. And other cops who cover it up. It's pretty grim. Anyhow, I wanted to share with you Elizabeth Warren. This, you know, I've been saying for quite some time now that the Republican war on women is literally a war on women. And it's all about rolling back a woman's right to decide whether or not to become pregnant. And if she becomes pregnant unintentionally, or there's something wrong with the pregnancy, or circumstances change, the right to end to terminate that pregnancy within a reasonable window. I mean, nobody's in favor of, you know, aborting a perfectly healthy baby that's viable. It's illegal to begin with. And secondly, I don't think anybody could defend that. But long before that, when it's just a blob of tissue. But this is not even about abortion, really. This is about saying women got too much power in 61 when the birth control pill was rolled out, and 73 when with Roe v. Wade, 61 the FDA certified the birth control pill. The very first birth control pill is legal. By the late 60s, there was also the IUD, and then in 73 you had Roe v. Wade. And what that did was it set the stage for women to seize corporate power, to seize political power, because now they had control over their bodies. Because pregnancy can be a very interrupt-your-life kind of thing. And they got control over their bodies, and they started participating in our political dialogue. They started, almost 20% of the Democratic elected officials in Congress are women, only 5% of Republicans. But, you know, surprise, surprise. So here's Elizabeth Warren. This is clip number 15, or our first Elizabeth Warren clip from yesterday, when the Republicans voted. The Democrats blocked the vote successfully with a filibuster. Republicans couldn't get 60 votes. Although Joe Manchin and one other Democrat voted with the Republicans to basically say, no more money for Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood, which provides cancer screening and free or reduced cost birth control devices and mammograms and all that kind of stuff. No more money for Planned Parenthood. Here's Elizabeth Warren on this.
Did you fold down, hit your head, and think you woke up in the 1950s? Or the 1890s, should we call for a doctor? Because I simply cannot believe that in the year 2015, the United States Senate would be spending its time trying to defund women's health care centers. You know, on second thought, maybe I shouldn't be that surprised. The Republicans have had a plan for years to strip away women's rights to make choices over our own bodies.
And then she comes right out and says, you know, this is an all-out attack on women's rights. Here's the next clip.
Let's be really clear about something. The Republican scheme to defund Planned Parenthood is not some sort of surprised response to a highly edited video. Nope, the Republican vote to defund Planned Parenthood is just one more piece of a deliberate, methodical, orchestrated right-wing attack on women's rights. And I'm sick and tired of it. Women everywhere are sick and tired of it. The American people are sick and tired of it.
Amen. And she points out that this is entirely political. I would even go farther than this. I would say Republicans are all hysterical about abortion because it allows them to change the conversation away from their basically pro-billionaire, pro-bribery agenda, as Jimmy Carter pointed out on this program last Tuesday. Anyhow, here's Elizabeth Warren on this, on the timing of it.
Pulling this vote during the week of a big Fox News presidential primary debate, days before candidates take trips to Iowa or New Hampshire, isn't just some clever gimmick. This is an all-out effort to build support to take away a woman's right to control her own body and access to medical care she may need.
And Elizabeth Warren goes on to point out that the Hyde Amendment has been in place for 40 years. No federal dollars go to pay for abortion, period. And not through Planned Parenthood either. There's no federal, right? I mean, the Republicans are literally, you know, making this up as they're going along. They're lying to people about this. Anyhow, we'll be back with your calls. It's Anything Goes Summer right after the break for the news here at the bottom of the hour. Stick around. I've got one more Elizabeth Warren, or two more Elizabeth Warren clips I want to share with you on that topic, you know, what the real Republican agenda is. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And we'll be picking up your calls. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, we had a fellow from the Heritage Foundation on yesterday debating the minimum wage with me. And I asserted that if the 1968 minimum wage were inflation adjusted to today, it would be in the neighborhood of $12. He asserted that it would be in the neighborhood of $8. And turns out if you go to dol.gov/minwage/chart1.html, and a tip of the hat to Nell for passing this along to me, it's actually $10.34. So I was wrong, he was wrong, and that's the real number. Just so you know, next time you get into a debate with somebody. Now, Elizabeth Warren speaking, let me just wrap this up and then I'll pick up your phone calls here. Elizabeth Warren speaking about this whole Sturm und Drang, the whole huffing and puffing that's going on the Republican side about these heavily edited videos that make it look like Planned Parenthood is selling aborted fetus parts, and they're not. And by the way, the legislation that allowed Planned Parenthood and any other abortion provider to provide fetal tissue for medical research was supported and voted for by Mitch McConnell. This is something the Republicans supported. Hey, you know, these are stem cells. This stuff, you know, they have already been used to cure several different diseases and produce vaccines for others. But in any case, you know, even if you think that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as Elizabeth Warren points out, this is clip 18, it was, I guess this is number 4 in our Warren clips, Jim, federal dollars don't go to fund abortions. Here she is.
Just to be clear, even though the abortions performed at Planned Parenthood are safe and legal, the federal government is not paying for any of them, not one dime. For almost 40 years, the federal government has prohibited federal funding for abortions, except in the case of rape, incest, or life endangerment. Most of the money Planned Parenthood receives from the government comes in the form of Medicaid patients for medical care provided to low-income patients, the same payments that any other doctor or clinic receives for providing cancer screenings or other medical exams. The rest of Planned Parenthood's federal funding comes from Title X that provides birth control to low-income and uninsured people, the same program the House Republicans voted to cut in June. The government doesn't fund abortions, period.
There you go. And then she goes on to point out, you know, this whole Republican theater is a scam. This is our last Warren clip.
A vote today to defund Planned Parenthood is not a vote to defund abortions. It's a vote to defund cancer screenings and birth control and basic health care for millions of women. I want to say to my Republican colleagues, the year is 2015, not 1955 and not 1895. Women have lived through a world where backward-looking ideologues tried to interfere with the basic health decisions made by a woman and her doctor. And we are not going back. Not now, not ever.
There you go. And in fact, I would say that a vote to defund Planned Parenthood is a vote to increase the number of abortions in the United States, because you're going to massively increase the number of unplanned pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies. But, you know, that's logical. Don't expect Republicans to get on with that. Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I was intrigued by your earlier conversation with the gentleman that did the firearms training. And, you know, for the last few days, I've been struggling with this whole thing about Cecil the Lion. And I thought about the kind of a Dickensian tale of two cities, a tale of two Africans. I mean, as you said earlier, you can take the name and replace it and, you know, put it in the blank, whether it be Cecil versus Sandra or Cecil versus Eric or Cecil versus Trayvon. What is it about white men and their fascination with killing things from Africa? Is that something that's genetic, or am I missing something? Because it seems to me that if you take Africa out of the equation, the white man has very little to entertain himself with, and I don't know if this is relative to that penile insecurity issue that you spoke about, but it does seem to be fairly prevalent. Am I off base here?
I don't think so. I can't explain it. I've my own personal theories tend to follow yours, I think. But you know, if you took Africa out of the equation, you got white men like, you know, Ronald Reagan and Ollie North, who were perfectly happy to kill brown people down in Honduras, Nicaragua, and El Salvador. So it's not like there's a shortage of people who are non-white people around the world that the white power structure, the white male power structure, is reluctant to shoot at. And then look at the people of color in Iraq.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm with you, and it's an excellent point, and I think that. Saying that we need to reserve our outrage just for humans it's important to point out our outrage about humans. But I think it's also, if we don't realize that we are part of the natural world, that we are interconnected and interrelated with every other living thing, and frankly, I believe with everything. I think even inanimate objects are filled with the fire of life, but that's the pantheist in me, or the animist in me. But I think that we can do both. We can be outraged about Cecil the Lion, and we can be outraged about Sandra and Tamir and on through the list. Absolutely.
I agree, Tom, but I'd like to make one brief additional point.
Sure.
I recently read a story about Darren Wilson. As you know, either we've just come up on the first anniversary, or it's just passed, or we're near the first anniversary of the Michael Brown shooting.
Yeah.
And I was astounded to find that he has received almost $1 million in donations across the country. He lives in a $500,000 house with a very sophisticated surveillance system in it. And I look at the victims of, you know, the litany of lists of victims that you and I have talked about, and it's been in the news almost every daily, it seems. And I'm just trying to figure out what is the message that is really and I don't mean the loud message. I mean the message from the silence of white America.
Yeah.
When you see these kinds of things happening, there seems to be some disparity, and I'm trying to be objective about it, but I don't recall any of those victims receiving $1 million in donations. Do you?
No, I don't. And although some of them, I mean, you know, Eric Garner's family just got a $5 million settlement from New York State, from New York City, but they had to sue to get it, which is a whole different thing than having, you know, people all over the country send you $20 or $500 or $1,000, because gee, they really like white cops who kill black people. But I think that's what you're seeing is, and frankly, I think, you know, Fox News is driving an awful lot of it. And I saw the same article you did. I'm assuming it was the interview with Darren Wilson, where he's now kind of living, like you said, in a quiet life, as it were. Wasn't that in the New York Times today, as I recall? I don't remember which website I read it on, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. Never underestimate. And this is something we all have to repeatedly point out. Never underestimate the depth of white racism in this country.
Oh, I can't underestimate it.
And I'm not even talking about explicit white racism. I'm talking about, you know, I think people like Bill O'Reilly who deny that there's any such thing as white privilege, that is a form of racism. That is holding up the institution of white male supremacy. And you know, that's an institution that has to be torn down. Rather than maybe tearing it down, lift up everybody else so that you know, we all have, you know, an equal standing, which was the effort of the Great Society, actually, that has been, you know, systematically dismantled since Reaganism began. But
Tom, I know that you've got to get to another call, but let me just say this, because I'm trying to do my part to do exactly what you just said, and you do an excellent job of that. I have so much respect for you. But let me tell you this. Every black man, and even white man, that has tried to do that, particularly as it pertains to black Americans, whether it be Abraham Lincoln or John F. Kennedy or Robert F. Kennedy or Malcolm X or Martin Luther King, they seem to always end up with a bullet in their head.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree. And that's why I said don't ever underestimate the depth and breadth, frankly. I mean, this is the of white racism, ranging from unconscious white racism to sort of conscious, you know, like the whites who make jokes, right? You know, but they don't. They're not out there marching with the Klan. To the Klan. I mean, this whole thing with the South Carolina flag, you know, brought out the Klan. It's like, you know, all of a sudden we're like, oh, whoa, look at that. I mean, they're still here. And they've got a lot of power, a hell of a lot of power, particularly in the South, although it's growing in the North as well. So
yeah, and then police departments.
Yes.
The country.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you saw the piece over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org, but now Brazil's police, Rio de Janeiro's police apparently are some of the most brutal in the world. And guess who they've been trained by? American police forces. So it's just, you know, and you know, Brazil has its own problems with race. Kenyatta, thanks a lot for the call. It's always good to hear from you. It's always a thoughtful analysis of the situation of the day. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls and the talk radio news as well, right after the break. Welcome back. John in Minneapolis watching Free Speech TV. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about Cecil the Lion, since this dentist was from Bloomington, Minnesota. I don't think he's going to have very much of a practice left after this incident because so many people are aware of him and they're picketing his office and whatnot. But he had also done something similar in Wisconsin where he lured a black bear out of a reserve to kill it.
And he was convicted of that as a felony.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess, you know, trophy hunting at one time, you know, it was, I guess, you know, the activity of the, you know, uber rich like Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, if you go to Sagamore Hill, you see nothing but heads and one in his billiard room and all that. And, but it's so.
And Donald Trump's two sons who go
really,
big game hunting now, too.
You know, it's really ridiculous. And, yeah, I don't understand the motivation either, especially. You know, these are endangered species, and then I think lions are not, you know, they're in not quite as endangered where he did get this lion. But I hope he has to face charges in Zimbabwe. I think that, I don't know. I mean, my gut feeling is, I think it would be nice to have open season on trophy hunters because I don't have very much respect for them, and I certainly wouldn't want my dentist to be a trophy hunter.
If he seriously wants to demonstrate what a tough guy he is, let's put him in a ring with the lion.
Yeah, something
the Romans
like,
tried that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're such majestic, animals, and there's so few of them. Why kill one? I just don't get that at all. I mean, it's much more interesting to watch them, and if you can afford to go on and down and actually see them, not in a zoo, but in the wild, and observe them.
Right.
You know, it's really interesting, their habitat and the things that they do. But I don't have much respect for people who do anything other than subsistence types of hunting where they actually eat the meat. And there's plenty of deer here in Minnesota. They're overpopulated because we've killed, like you said, wolves. We also used to have mountain lions, and they're on, I think, been eradicated from a lot of places. So there isn't a lot of predators and they're overpopulating, then it's a bit different. Then it's more humane, you know, perhaps to kill them. But I still would rather people eat the meat rather than just, you know, use it for trophy hunting. I think that's kind of pathetic, but
yeah,
that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and it's not typically, I see the, you know, the trophy hunting and the Dick Cheney, trapped game release and shoot kind of hunting. I don't see either one of those things as hunting. I see them as just some bizarre variation on you know, carrying around a stick that goes bang when you pull the trigger. There's something just fundamentally psychologically wrong with it. John, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And on the line with us is Luke Vargas. Luke, I give a tip of the hat to you in the last hour because we played the clips that you pulled together from last night's New Hampshire forum, Republican forum. And since no Democrats were talking back to these guys, thanks to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's decision to only have six Democratic debates, I talked back to them. But anyhow, thank you for the clips.
You're very welcome.
And welcome to the program. You are still in New Hampshire. What's going on there?
Well, not much now. Things have cooled off a little bit. There are a few candidates still in the state, but pretty much we're still looking forward at this point. I say there's a little bit of lingering commentary about last night's events, and I'm fully equipped to break it down, but I think many people are looking forward to the debate on Fox News. In just a few hours now, we'll get the final indication from Fox which candidates are going to be on that stage. So I think it's pretty clear at this point which 10 candidates that's going to be. And I'll say very briefly, I mean, the biggest takeaway I've got here is that last night's debate did not feature Donald Trump, I think, strangely, to the detriment of the candidates who were on stage. I really detected at many points throughout the forum last night that these candidates had sort of lost the thread of their own campaigns, because I believe, as these media reports have been indicating, particularly about some of the frontrunners such as Jeb Bush, that they've been beefing up on this Fox debate so much over the last few weeks that they've been learning how to talk about themselves in relation to Donald Trump, that without him there as sort of a sounding board, that the edge that they might otherwise have, and I actually do think we'll see on Thursday, was a little bit lacking. So again,
in other words, their principal argument is, I'm not the crazy guy.
That could be. That's not to say that everybody on that stage yesterday intends to hit him squarely between the eyes when he or she gets the chance on Thursday. But I really did detect that, and it was in the language I heard yesterday, that he has had a pretty profound psychological impact on these candidates, that they have really only been able to, over the last few weeks, conceive of their own candidacies in relation to him. I think there's tremendous anxiety on behalf of many of these career politicians who find themselves at sub 5% in the polls, being paraded alongside 13 other candidates on a stage without much to show for it. So again, I think there is a little bit of panic setting in, and I think that would explain, and maybe some of it could be chalked up to the way the forum was organized yesterday, that it was quite stressful for a lot of these candidates. If you saw the C-SPAN footage, all of the candidates, when they weren't speaking, were arranged right at the foot of the stage. It was like kids in elementary school at an assembly or something.
Right.
And when you weren't talking, you weren't in your town car or in the wings of the theater, getting a head massage. You had to listen and sort of measure up your own words against those that were on stage. And I really seemed like no one quite had the headspace on that stage. And that would partially explain why I think the candidates who came down to D.C. for that vote, the three senators, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz, sitting in some black felt-lined studio with no crowd, actually seemed to be the most coherent of the bunch. They didn't have to worry about walking on stage like beauty queens. So, again, a very odd format, and I think it was quite telling about the state of the race.
I think that we're at a moment right now that's not all that different from the 70s and 1980, which is... Jimmy Carter, you know, you had the Nixon scandals, and America became disgusted with the political class in 73. And Gerry Ford became president, and his one redeeming virtue was that he was not Richard Nixon. But everybody got it that he wasn't, you know, a great intellect or a great president. And so we got Jimmy Carter, who was an outsider. He ran as an outsider. I'm not from the Beltway. I'm a, you know, peanut farmer from Georgia. And we elected an outsider. We wanted an outsider. And then in 1980, America still wanted an outsider. We were still disgusted with the political class. And so Reagan ran as an outsider. You know, the nine most dangerous words are, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. He ran as, I hate the government, elect me, to be head of the government. I think we're at a very similar point right now where, in part because of Citizens United, people get it that Jimmy Carter's right when he says, we now have an oligarchy with unlimited political bribery, which is what he said on this program on Tuesday of last week, and that Donald Trump represents the outsider, and which is why he's so popular. I think it's true also of Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. And so what I'm predicting we're going to see, at least among the politicians who are really good at measuring the public sentiment, is that they're going to start running as if they are outsiders. And the big challenge that Scott Walker has in that regard is that he's probably going to be the recipient of $900 billion from the Koch brothers. And how do you spin that as being an outsider since the Koch brothers seem to have captured much of the Republican Party?
I don't know how you can do it. I have to say the one critique I heard of Scott Walker from voters in New Hampshire yesterday is that he just does not know how to give a presentation without just repeating his biography in 17, 18 different ways every time. I mean, he's got the facts down. You're right. He can cite statistics up the wazoo, but it seems like when it actually comes down to framing his candidacy within sort of a modern American narrative, he seems to be lacking a little bit. It's a lot of buzzwords. I will point out very briefly, to riff a little bit off of what you were just saying, that I think Marco Rubio is...
Oh, Luke, your Skype just croaked. If you can hear me, I can't hear you. So, yeah, he's frozen up. Okay, we only have 30 seconds. So let me just continue along those lines. I'm not sure where Luke was going, although it sounded like he was about to say that Marco Rubio is the outsider candidate or is trying to position himself as such. Marco Rubio has had one billionaire who has supported him his entire life, who got him into politics, got him to be the senator from Florida, and, you know, wants him to be president. So basically on the Republican side, if you want to aspire to really, really high office, you got to have a billionaire. And Scott Walker's got the Koch brothers, who are the, you know, capo di capos of the billionaires. And, you know, I don't know if Huckabee's got this time around, you know, if he's got Shelley Adelson with him or not. You know, it's like, you know, whoever's most hysterical about Iran, that will be who has the Adelson money. So we'll see where it goes. Anyhow, we'll be back with your calls and more right after the news at the top of the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Dan Mitchell, Ph.D., Dr. Dan Mitchell, an economist and senior fellow at the Cato Institute, and also serves on the editorial board of the Cayman Financial Review. Cato.org, of course, is the website. Do I have that right, Dr. Mitchell?
That's all correct.
Okay. Welcome to the program. My understanding is that we are, the goal of our conversation is to discuss a we society like the United States had arguably from the 1930s until the 1980s versus a me society, greed is good, like we had under Reaganism from 1980 to today, and which might be better. Do I have that right?
Well, I've never actually agreed with that classification, because I think all through human history, there's always been an element of greed. And the question is that greed channeled productively, or is it channeled unproductively? And if you have cronyism, if you have government with a lot of power over the economy, then greed gets channeled unproductively. Whereas if you have a genuine market economy, then if someone really wants to become rich, they can only become rich by serving the needs of their fellow man. And
so,
I like that.
So then you're absolutely opposed to the Koch brothers putting $900 billion behind Scott Walker.
I don't quite think they're putting $900 billion behind Scott
Walker.
But I'm a firm believer that we have a First Amendment protecting participation in the political process. And if the Koch brothers decide to pick Scott Walker or Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio, or for that matter, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, that's their right.
How is that? That is completely inconsistent with what you just said a moment ago. You said you are opposed to crony capitalism, where the capitalists reach out, I'm paraphrasing, reach out for control over government so that the government is supporting the capitalists and vice versa. And yet that's exactly what we're describing when we talk about, you know, billionaires buying politicians.
The real issue is what are they trying to achieve? Now, the Koch brothers, at least as far as I understand it, they want to get rid of the Export-Import Bank. They want to get rid of energy subsidies, some of which benefit their own companies. So they're looking to back politicians who will actually reduce the power of government, which means that the Koch industries and the various companies that are controlled by the Kochs would have to earn money by pleasing consumers rather than buying politicians.
Dan, you and I both know it's not that simple. One of the major campaigns that not just the, and I want to personalize this to the Koch brothers, although the Cato Institute started out as the Charles Koch Foundation. But let's take the Koch brothers out of the equation. ExxonMobil has been funding for decades climate denial. They've known since the 1970s that climate change was happening, and that it was happening as a result of their products. And they are buying scientists, the same scientists who are denying that tobacco causes cancer, you know, the Fred Singers of the world. They're getting these guys out there and saying, oh, there's no such thing here. How is that? And look at the tax breaks. I mean, you've got a $5 trillion in government support for the fossil fuel industry worldwide annually. How is that? And this is stuff that is supported by these very wealthy people in the United States. And you're calling it a First Amendment right, and yet you're decrying crony capitalism. I don't get it.
I support anybody's right to participate in the political process. I might then disagree with their goals for trying to help politicians. If you're giving money to a politician because you want that politician to take money from person A to give it to you, I think that's bad. If you're giving money to a politician because you simply want to be left alone, I think that's admirable.
How is ExxonMobil making $40 billion in profits and paying no income taxes because they were able to hire lobbyists to drill a million holes in the tax code? How is that not crony capitalism?
The tax code is 75,000 pages of special interest loopholes. I'm a flat tax guy, so I'm completely with you that the tax code is horribly corrupt and benefits the special interest.
And all of those loopholes are there because some corporation or some billionaire or the Walton family or whatever, you know, their big thing, of course, is the inheritance tax, has been able to put money into the political process and get what they want. The average working person can't put money into the political process and get what they want. I mean, look at the study that came out of Princeton just a few months ago, that the desires of the top 1% are more than 56% likely to be made into legislation, whereas the desires of the bottom 90%, the probability of their becoming legislation is equal to random noise. This is not a democracy. It's an oligarchy, as Jimmy Carter called it on this program last week.
Well, that could very well be the case, that rich people have more influence, but then the
issue, why is that a good thing?
But what are the rich people looking for? 8 out of 10
more money.
Congressional districts in the country vote left, and they're voting for...
Then why do Republicans control the House and the Senate?
Because not the entire country isn't rich people on the coast, which tend to vote Democrat. So you do have this very strange thing where you have some very rich people voting very hardcore left, and then you have middle America voting more toward the right. And I'm more on the side of middle America. I want government out of the economy. I want genuine markets to determine how resources get allocated, not whether politicians have their fingers on the scale.
Dan, my take on this is that the Republican Party and increasingly parts of the Democratic Party, I'd say at least the Blue Dog Caucus, the Republican Party is basically made up of three groups. You've got the billionaires who are funding everything and the transnational corporations. You've got the well-paid shills for them or spokespeople for them. And you've got the dupes, the suckers. And you're calling them middle Americans. I'm calling them suckers. How is it to the benefit of anybody to vote for a politician whose principal agenda is to deregulate the fossil fuel industry so that more poison gets pumped into our air, deregulate the banks so we're more likely to have an economic crash, and cut taxes on the Walton family and the Kochs? Which is what Sam Brownback did.
If my choice as a middle American is becoming more like Greece or trying not to become like Greece, then I think it's in my best interest not to become like Greece.
Well, but Republicans are, you know, if you wanted to use the Greece analogy is Louisiana. Louisiana is sucking as much federal, roughly as much federal money out of the federal government as Greece was 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, Louisiana is a net drain. They consume federal resources, unlike California, which provides a surplus of federal resources. This is largely true across the red states. So the Republican states, by and large, are Greece. And the Republican politicians by saying, oh, no, you know, we can't expand Medicaid here. We can't, you know, and we got to cut taxes on the billionaires like Sam Brownback did in Kansas and Scott Walker did in Wisconsin. And all of a sudden their states are hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in debt. Oh, well, the solution to that is to cut money for education. Really? How does that help the middle Americans?
If you want to keep making government bigger and keep making different states, or for that matter, the federal government more like Greece, that doesn't end well. If I look at the states, the 50 states, and yes, there are little anomalies on each side, but by and large, the states that are in the biggest trouble are the ones that follow the blue model of higher taxes and bigger government.
You mean like California?
I guarantee you,
which has a surplus.
California
right now.
And Illinois will go bankrupt before Louisiana does.
California has a surplus right now. Jerry Brown raised taxes, and they have a surplus.
It's which one will go bankrupt first, and I'm more than happy.
Well, Louisiana, if Louisiana was held to the same rules, and you know this, you're an economist. Come on, Dan. If Louisiana was held to the exact same rules as Greece, which is as a state, and you can't have any more federal money than anybody else has, they would be bankrupt right now. And
sure
so would Mississippi, and so would Alabama, and so would Texas.
I do agree with you fully that we shouldn't be having subsidies from the federal government to the states. We should have genuine decentralization and federalism. Let states be responsible for raising and spending their own money and make Washington a much smaller part of our economy.
So then what do you do for the kids who are born in poor states like West Virginia or Louisiana or Alabama, and you know, there's no money for their schools? What do you do?
Oh, you could do school choice to get much better education for less money.
I see. Bring in for-profit private schools.
It works in Sweden.
Okay. You have the last word. Dan Mitchell, Dr. Dan Mitchell, senior fellow with the Cato Institute, the website cato.org. Thanks, Dan, for dropping by today.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour, anything goes. Summer, stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's see, Sweden. I don't see anything here about Swedes have privatized their schools. Well, anyhow, I've got to learn more about this. That was a new one for me. That was a brand new one for me. Alan in Glendale, California, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Alan, how you doing?
I'll be right back. Yes.
What's up?
Tom, is that you?
That's me. You're on the air.
Okay. I would just like to add a little clarity to the conversation. If you just indulge me, Tom, I'm going to talk maybe for 2 or 3 minutes, and then you can comment the rest of the way.
Okay.
If that's acceptable to you.
Sure.
Okay. The next president of the United States, this is my prediction, obviously, speculation, will be Joe Biden. And I'll tell you why I think that. I saw CNN this morning, and they say Hillary Clinton's numbers have plummeted. Her popularity rate, her unpopularity ratings, and her popularity ratings, popular ratings have shot down. She's more unpopular than ever. Trump won't last it because he'll come out with some sort of scandal. You know, he was accused of.
Well, Trump won't last because he doesn't want to. I mean, you know, he's just having fun chasing his tail here. You know, he has no interest in governing.
I don't think he has no interest in being president.
Yeah.
He just wants to kind of get back at some of these guys who I think he feels are unpatriotic to the country.
Right.
And Hillary, I think, is gone. I think, you know, unfortunately, she is a brilliant woman. But I think because of maybe Clinton fatigue, Bush fatigue, her numbers are going down, which is kind of incredible because she's not really out there yet.
Well, you know, we're almost a year and a half out from the election, so I wouldn't count her out. I wouldn't count her out.
That's what Donna Brazile said on CNN and another guy.
Yeah.
But you know what? She couldn't take out Obama last time when she had extreme advantages, and now she's falling. I don't think she's a particularly popular person.
We'll see. I mean, they just rolled out their first two campaign ads yesterday.
That's true. Anything can happen in politics.
Yeah.
Right?
But your Joe Biden point is that is the subtext to that
Biden
that
point.
Basically.
I want to make this specific, okay? Without Joe Biden.
Okay, go for it.
He has 53. Let's see. He was elected to the Senate. He was 30, so he has 43 years of experience. And here's his story, and you probably know it, Tom. When he was 29, he hadn't quite turned 30. His wife and one of his children were killed in a car accident. He decided to join the Senate. He didn't want to, but I think his sister had a big role in it. And he decided he was going to go in the Senate. And his sister agreed to take care of the child or children. I'm not sure. I think it was one child. Maybe it was two.
Yeah, we got 20 seconds, Alan.
He worked his way up. But he was from an Irish Catholic family, hardworking. You know, he's from Delaware, and he worked his way up, and he kind of ended up in the Kennedy wing of the Democratic Party. And you remember when they went after Bork? It was Kennedy and Biden.
Yeah.
And Bork would have been on the Supreme Court, but Reagan, some of his those.
Yeah.
That Bork,
Alan, we're out of time. I'm sorry. You got it. You got a full 5 minutes there. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Ed in Riverside, California. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good. Oh, just a couple of thoughts. The so-called Republican forum last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I realized doctors have to take an oath to do no harm. The Republicans take an oath to tell no truth. I mean, I listened last night to so much stuff, and I'm going, oh, he's lying about that.
Yeah.
He was for that before, you know, that's a Republican program. I'm going, why don't they tell the truth?
Well, this is why I'm so upset with the Democratic National Committee, with the DNC and its leader, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, is that there was no Democratic response. There should have been five Democratic candidates on a stage someplace, could have been in New Hampshire, who did the exact same thing the Republicans did. And every time the Republicans have one of these debates, it's really not so much a debate. It's a love fest. I mean, they're competing for who can bash Democrats harder than the other, and all these memes are getting out there, and they're not being challenged, and there's only going to be six Democratic debates, and we still don't even know the dates yet, and the Republicans have already started this you know full court press, full tilt boogie going against the Democrats, against Barack Obama, and putting out. Framing and putting up the memes and lies that we care. Oh yes, that's a wonderful thing. So
you know, during
Go ahead, Ed.
Interrupt you there. During Occupy, I made up some flyers and went down to a Riverside Occupy thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did, I said, vote Republican. I said, help us do away with these agencies and unnecessary benefits. You know, I listed all the things Republicans had tried to get, taken like Medicare, you know, the whole list.
Right.
The agencies like EPA and stuff like that. And on the bottom, I said, vote against your own best self-interest.
That's brilliant.
Vote Republican.
That's brilliant. We should be passing those things out all over the country. I mean, that would be a great DNC thing, you know, to put together a list of all the things that the Republicans have said and done over over the last couple of years. I mean, look at all the legislation that they prevented from becoming law that would have brought our jobs back home from Asia, that would have strengthened this country, that would have put back together our infrastructure, that would have allowed for free college education for people. The Republicans opposed all of these things. And, you know, it's like a variation on the billionaires for Bush thing. I'm with you. Ed, that's brilliant. Thank you for that. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. Okay, 25 seconds.
Okay.
I think the dude that murdered Cecil the Lion is terrible. But I think that people can become numb, however immature that may be. Consider what early white Americans did to the American bison, where they just killed the bison to take away the major food.
Michael, consider what they did to the American Indian. I mean, you know, white people were hunting humans, were hunting American Indians, Native Americans for sport.
I agree. That's even worse. I'll give you that. But, I mean, I'm just saying, but the reason they did it was to take away the major food source of Native Americans as a way of contributing to the genocide of Native Americans.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we've come a ways, I guess. Michael, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Danielle just handed this to me, an article by Ray Fissman in the Dismal Science website, and it's titled Sweden's School Choice Disaster. Now, this is fascinating. Advocates for choice-based solutions should take a look at what's happened to schools in Sweden, where parents and educators would be thrilled to trade their country's steep drop in PISA scores. These are the test scores, you know, the kids take when they're in high school. Over the past 10 years, for America's middling but consistent results. What caused the recent crisis in Swedish education? Researchers and policy analysts are increasingly pointing the finger at many of the so-called choice-oriented reforms that are being championed as the way forward for American schools. Turns out that a system was put into place in the early 90s in Sweden by a center-right government inspired by the ideas of Milton Friedman. This is based on his 1955 article, The Role of Government in Education, which was basically, you know, vouchers. And schools would be forced to improve their quality to compete for students and their voucher dollars. And apparently they did this in Sweden, and it's just produced a disaster. For a while, at least if media accounts of the reforms are any indication, things look like they were going pretty well. Voucher school students consistently outperformed their counterparts at government schools. In 2008, the London Telegraph described the reforms as tremendous. But in the wake of the country's nosedive in the PISA ratings, there's widespread recognition that something's wrong with Sweden's schools. In total, nearly 50,000 students at all grade levels from more than 700 schools had their tests in English, Swedish, science, and math reevaluated. It's the darker side of competition that Milton Friedman and his free market disciples tend to downplay. If parents value high test scores, you can compete for voucher dollars by hiring better teachers and providing a better education, or by going easy in grading national tests. Right. So the net, simply opening the floodgates to more education entrepreneurs doesn't disrupt education. It's just plain disruptive. Sweden is apparently having a crisis in their schools, because they adopted the policies, these so-called free market policies, these so-called libertarian policies of let's take federal money or let's take government money and give it to people as vouchers so they can then go to a for-profit school that will compete with other for-profit schools to say, oh, we can educate your kid better. And it doesn't work, because the first job of a for-profit institution is not to provide a school, it's to make money. And so the schools, I mean, the competition among the schools is going to be who makes the most money. That's who wins. And, you know, if one of the ways to get money is to get high test scores, cool. But if everybody is just trying to make money, then, you know, you're going to see the thing start falling apart. And that's exactly apparently what's happening in Sweden right now. Fascinating. I'm so glad I learned that from the Cato Foundation guy. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. It's Anything Goes Summer. And we'll be back with your calls after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 202-536-2370.
Or 536-3270. We'll be right back with your calls. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, that's interesting. Let's see here. Ray in McHenry, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Ray, what's up? Ray, you are on the air. Ray, call us back if you can hear me. I can't hear you. Willis in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hey, Willis, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
Tom, I was just, you know, reading the Bible, and it's something about women, how they've been under the authority of men. And you were talking about abortion.
Right.
Have you ever read Numbers, the fifth chapter, where they was talking about how the priest gave the woman the bitter pill if she was out having sex with another man and she was married?
Right. There are dozens of references to abortion in the Bible, and they're all justified.
Right.
You know, if you hit a woman and cause her to abort, you have to pay her a certain number of shekels. You know, there's no punishment. You just have to pay for it. God actually causes a whole bunch of abortions, not to mention, you know, the whole Exodus story is, you know, God killing the firstborn of all the non-Jews. And, you know, apparently God couldn't figure out who was who because you had to put blood on over your doorstep. And, you know, Betty Bowers, America's Best Christian, does a marvelous skit on all the ways and all the times and all the places in the Bible where God commits abortion and sanctions abortion and promotes abortion, frankly. But I don't know of any place in the Bible where God forbids abortion. Do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. So was that your point?
That was my point.
Okay. Willis, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Ray in McHenry. Let's try it again, Ray.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Tom?
Just fine.
Okay. One of my big concerns is I don't think the American people have ever realized just how much elections starting in 1980 and 2000 and 2008 were really about oil and protecting the interest of the oil industry and fossil fuels. And I think because of that, they don't see how this next election is really going to be about that again, because we're at a crucial point for global warming. And just like, you know, it was in 1980 and 2000 with Al Gore and Carter administration, you know, the oil industry is really being threatened right now, and they're fighting back and pushing back real hard. And the biggest clue is just the fact that the Koch brothers, whose main source of income is oil and fossil fuels, are in to the tune of $900 million.
Right.
And I'm afraid that if Republicans win this election, we are just, to use the title of your book, we're screwed.
Yeah. My prediction is that if a Republican wins the election, there will be a great crash. We will go into a Great Depression, and that Republican will go down in history as Herbert Hoover. And it will lead to the rebooting of the United States under a Democratic president 4 years down the road. And, you know, a new renaissance of this country. If a Democrat is elected president, I still think that there's going to be a crash between now and then or after that. And frankly, if a crash happens before the primaries, I think that bodes well for the outsider candidate, which would be Bernie, as opposed to the insider candidate, which would be Hillary. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, an awful lot depends on how they decide to react to it. So back to you, Ray.
You know some of the history? I mean, remember when James Watt became Reagan's Secretary of Interior?
I remember
Did
well.
You know that Gail Norton was his understudy, and she was the first appointment of Bush and Cheney, who were two oil men? That should be our big clue. And the other thing about Sarah Palin, I just heard the other day that she actually, as the governor of the state, sued to try to whatever you call it, when the polar bear were listed as endangered species. Yes, he sued to prevent that. that's why she was picked, because of her stances on oil and all that. So many clues all these years about just how much oil is playing a hidden agenda. And what's happening is, what always happened is, Republicans always successfully create all these other distractions, and they're doing it again. All this stuff about Planned Parenthood and abortions coming up again, and Donald Trump, and they're completely distracting everybody from what I think is the real underlying issue, and that's protecting the fossil fuel industry. And people are going to go to the ballot box and have no clue what's really going on. Again,
I absolutely agree. And whether it's, you know, Willie Horton be afraid of black people, or whether it's Judge Moore and his Ten Commandments, and we need school prayer, which was a big deal, 15 years ago or so, or whether it's abortion, whether it's gay rights. I mean, every single one of these wedge issues that don't cost billionaires anything, so they don't really care. But hey, you know, the average American who watches Fox News could be whipped into a frenzy with these wedge issues. It allows the Republicans to not talk about their real agenda, which is economic. And oil is, I agree with you, it's a huge part of it. I mean, oil is what fuels our economy. Oil is our most essential commodity, maybe second most behind water. And it has distorted our political dialogue since the 1870s, the 1880s, I'd say. You know, John Rockefeller was the first to really use the power of money made with oil to change laws. I mean, the charter-mongering era in the 1890s, where all the states changed their state and corporation laws so that you no longer had to say that your first job as a corporation was to serve the local community. Instead, you could simply say the job of this corporation is just to make a profit. I think Ray, you put your finger on something really important, and that's the essence, I think, of the Koch brothers' support for Scott Walker, and why I think it was such a hoot that those 350.org activists were able to get Scott Walker to shake hands in front of a novelty check for $900 million made out to Scott Walker by the Koch brothers. It's a very, very good one. Ray, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to WCPT. Benjamin in Madison, Mississippi. Hey, Benjamin, what's up?
Well, Tom, I was just going to get back. We found out that, in fact, I was right last week, that Obama did sign an executive order banning, talking about with Cecil and everything on mm-hmm. wildlife, bringing in ivory from out of the country, even if it's a 300-year-old piece of jewelry or a bead on the front sight of a gun.
Really?
He's gone to the length to do that. But
that's on importing it, not simply selling it within the country.
Correct. Importing right. it, bringing right. it in.
Okay.
New York is.
I don't have a problem with that.
The sale. Yeah, New York, I think, is outlawed selling a piece of jewelry to another New York resident if it contains ivory as well. But
right.
what was so hypocritical about it was that, like I said, you can go to Africa next month and kill an elephant and bring back two tusks, but you can't bring back a piece of jewelry.
Yeah. We need to outlaw that too.
Simply because it's considered a trophy and it's not commercial.
Yeah, I understand. Benjamin, I agree. I think we need to outlaw trophy. Frankly, I think that we should just outlaw trophy hunting, period. But I'm not going to find a big consensus for that, among the guys who want to go out and shoot moose and bighorn elk and whatnot. Benjamin, thanks for the call. Jim in Covington, Louisiana. Hey, Jim. What's his name? Scar was attacking Elizabeth Warren this morning?
Yeah, I just happened to wake up and it was on, and he, sure enough, he was going after her, and he didn't get the reference that she made in her speech about going back to 1955 and 1890. He acted like she didn't know what she was talking about. It was just... And then his so-called cohorts just sit there and don't say, nobody challenges, and they even back him up, it seemed to me.
Well, he's the star of the show. If they challenge him too much, they won't be invited back.
Yeah. But it was just really disgusting. It's bad. So, he used to be a congressman, and then he had that little problem with the dead woman in his office.
Yeah.
Now, if that were you and me, we'd be in a lot more hot water.
Well, probably. He was out of town when that dead woman was found in his office. But, sort of interrupt his political career. He was in D.C. She was in Florida. Otherwise, it would be much more of a scandal, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a solution. If you don't like what you see or hear on Morning Joe, find another show to watch in the morning.
You got it.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much what I've done. Or you know, listen, or just I just spend my mornings now reading, doing show prep and stuff. But, yeah, it is a sad commentary. And I'm surprised that Mika Brzezinski didn't – well, I didn't see it, so I can't – I don't want to speak to it. But, Jim, thank you for the call, and thanks for the heads up on that. Grant in Ventura, California, listening at 1150 a.m. Hey, Grant, what's up?
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Hi, I'm great.
I have a theory for you.
Mm-hmm.
And my theory is that Republicans are using Joseph Goebbels tactics long ago, the banksters, the war machine, the Koch brothers, the mouthpieces that they lived by to lie to the American public. Because as Goebbels said, if you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually believe it. And that's exactly why there are 18 to 20 Republican candidates out there. They stagger them out there in such a way as to keep repeating those lies.
Yeah.
Lies like the need for war, or more guns, or deregulation of gas, coal, and oil, Planned Parenthood attacks, the war on Social Security, Medicare, privatizing the schools so kids will have to pay more money for them. You know, it's just, it's all lies. And Goebbels said that the bigger the lie, the more people will believe it.
No, you're right, and Goebbels' point was the bigger the lie, the more likely it is to be believed if you consistently repeat it over and over again, because people will go, well, he wouldn't say that if it wasn't true. I mean, you know, that's outrageous. And thank you, Grant, for the call. And that's how these Reaganomics memes have gotten so widespread. That, oh, if you cut taxes on rich people, it'll help all the rest of us. No, it's a lie, for example.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls right after this. Welcome back. This is interesting. July 23rd conversation with Jamie Harrison, chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Sort of been, what, 2 weeks ago, week and a half, 2 weeks ago, about how to deal with racism in the United States. And Hillary Clinton said, this movement, that would be the Black Lives Matter movement, is fueled in large measure by young people, and it is a particular development in the civil rights movement that deserves our support. I agree with her on that. She said, by that I mean there are some who say, well, racism is a result of economic inequality. I don't believe that. I think that's an attempt to misrepresent what Bernie Sanders is saying, which is that racism causes economic inequality, and that fixing economic inequality will go a long way toward diminishing the effects of racism, but that they're two separate things that interact with each other. And apparently Hillary Clinton has tried to say that Bernie is saying racism is the result of economic inequality. No. That's fascinating. I'm seeing this over at Democratic Underground right now, a post by Willie T. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. Anyhow, let's see here. Tina in Fort Myers, Florida. Hey, Tina, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, Tina. How are you?
Well, wonderful. Thank you. I just heard the gentleman talking about doing the business card thing, and I have been doing that for a couple of months. I sell on eBay, so each one of my listings, I put my little blurb down at the bottom for Bernie,
mm-hmm.
and when I send out their packages, I put in this card, and I also give them a dollar rebate with the stamp that says not intended for writing politicians,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just doing that to get the word out, and I thought if I related this to people, maybe they could think of some creative way that they could introduce something they can do in their everyday lives to help Bernie.
That's a great idea. That's a great suggestion. What do your cards say?
Well, I used your little intro. It says my name, and it says patriot, lover of democracy, truth and justice, believer in peace, freedom, and the American way. And it says, I endorse Bernie Sanders for president, and then I give his website at the bottom. And then on the back it says, we the people are facing some really big issues, which if not changed, are going to continue to negatively affect our descendants. And then I put his 3 points from his website, income and wealth inequality, getting big money out of politics, and climate change and the environment. And then I put, please, please, please vote to have your vote voice heard.
Hmm. That's great. That is great.
But I love your show, and I'm so glad that I found you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tina, and thank you for watching on Free Speech TV. And I think it's just, have you gotten any blowback from your eBay customers or any positive feedback for that matter?
I get people writing me back and saying, I'm a fellow patriot, go Bernie, and all kinds of neat stuff like that. I made some friends that way.
Generally positive feedback?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, very
That's
positive.
Wonderful. I think Americans are getting it. I really think they're getting it. Tina, thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. And what a great idea. And thanks for using our opening little riff. I freely distributed it. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Kevin in Medical Lake, Washington. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind today?
I'll tell you what. I don't know how it happened, but my roommate was watching CBS really early this morning, and they announced that Bernie is having events in Seattle.
Yeah.
And that's
coming up
this
week, this Saturday.
That's,
yes.
That's really cool. But you have to understand that on the east side of the Cascades, it's very red. So this is the only thing I've ever heard about Bernie Sanders over here, as far as being a national candidate.
Interesting. So you live on the west side, or on the east side rather, of Washington State,
in the
red state part of Washington State, basically.
That is correct. You know, heading towards that. Well, we're basically a suburb of Spokane.
Yeah.
And
heading in the direction of Idaho.
This has been, you know, this like whoa.
Fascinating.
We're getting someplace.
Yep. Step by step. Kevin, thanks for the call and thanks for the heads up. Brian in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Brian, what's up?
How are you doing, Tom?
Good.
You were talking about oil earlier and its role on the economy. Now, I'm a truck driver. I see how the price of diesel affects everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of ExxonMobil spending like $100 million to buy up a patent from a university on how to make diesel out of algae.
Really?
And the first time I had heard about that was the researchers were making like 200 or 300 barrels of oil, not gallons, but barrels, in a single day.
Right.
And they're just trying to figure out which algae would work best. Now, you know, I'm driving right now, so I can't look it up to really quote you exact sources. But
yeah, I shared a stage at a speech down in Dallas back, must be about a decade ago, with a guy who was an entrepreneur who was growing algae in these giant plastic bags out in the Texas sun and converting it into diesel fuel. I wonder if he's the guy that sold the patent to ExxonMobil.
Might be. My understanding was they bought it up from a university. They first offered to fund the research, and then as long as they sold them the patent, and then once they had the patent, they cut the funding on the research or something to that effect.
Yeah. Well, it can't be rocket science. I mean, you know, algae is a plant matter. Plant matter is hydrocarbons. That's, you know, what diesel fuel is, hydrocarbons. It's just, you know, rearranged in a different fashion. Fascinating. I'm going to have to do some digging on that. Brian, thanks for the heads up and the tip on that. Pat in Chicago. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
You know what always fascinates me and drives me crazy is whenever you're talking to a libertarian, and I have a few friends, and they say crony capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea what crony capitalism is, and I apply the definition you gave once before where you said fascism is when special interest or business takes over government, and socialism is when government takes over business. And they don't understand the illness in this country is not socialism, it's fascism, and crony capitalism is exactly fascism. It's a special interest buying a politician. The politicians aren't going out and saying, give me money and I'll do this. It's business saying, here's money, do this for me. You know,
right.
It's not, they don't understand that the illness is not from the left, it's from the right, and the corruption is from the right.
Yeah, yeah.
The solution for that is more right-wing philosophy.
Yeah, yeah, very well said, Pat, and I need to integrate that point into my thinking so that the next time somebody says crony capitalism, I say, oh, you mean fascism. Because you're right, it is when the capitalists reach out and take control of government so that they can rewrite the rules to their benefit. That is what Mussolini defined, Giovanni Gentile, you know, his ghostwriter, defined as fascism. Pat, thanks for that. Thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to CPT. George in Eureka, California. Hey, George, what's up?
Basically, something I didn't want to talk about, but it's real. Through my own stupidity, proving crooks are dumb, I wound up in jail many years ago. And one of the things that I found in jail almost universally are people who were not wanted as children. And this is one of the few aspects that is not discussed by our politicians or somebody defending the right of having an abortion.
Yeah.
If a child or an animal is not wanted, they're not going to thrive. They're going to be at odds with any environment that they're involved, that they have.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is one of the big parts when somebody can actually sit down and want a child, you betcha. If they cannot or don't want the child, they're creating a debt to society.
Yeah.
With their offspring.
Well, this is, I don't know if you've ever heard of Joan Chittister. She is a Catholic nun. A member of the order OSB, I don't know which order that is, but she sums up the hypocrisy of the so-called pro-life movement. She said, I do not believe that just because you're opposed to abortion, that makes you pro-life. In fact, I think in many cases, your morality is deeply lacking if all you want is a child born, but not a child fed, not a child educated, not a child housed. And why would I think that you don't? Because you don't want any tax money to go there. That's not pro-life, that's pro-birth. We need a much broader conversation on what the morality of pro-life is.
And boy, we should really trumpet that, because this is one of the big ones. Kids who aren't wanted have no chance.
Or much lower chances, yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay,
thank
well,
you, Tom.
Well said, George. Thank you very much. And this Sister Joan, I'm guessing, is taking some abuse from some Catholics for saying this, but I think she's right. Many people are not, they're not pro-life, they're pro-birth. And life, you know, extends until you die. What are you going to do with a child who is unwanted and with people who don't have the resources to care for that child? Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy in a democratically limited, representative republic is not something that just rolls on all by itself, just happens magically. No, it requires you and me to participate. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a
been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.